All right. So, yeah, we talked about karma a bit, you know, the aspects of, four aspects of karma, right? That's definite, that's the potential to increase, right? And it has the kind of aspect of that it cannot be experienced of somebody else, right? So we have individual streams of consciousness, yeah? So we know that consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself. So that means there's a stream of different moments within the continuum of one particular person or one particular individual. So that means that a previous moment creates the moment that comes after it, right? And that's been created by its previous, and that by its previous, and that by its previous. So within the one continuum of consciousness, actually there's no beginning as such. Yeah. So we talked about that a few times. So based on that kind of logical reasoning, we prove the existence of reincarnation. Right? We prove that consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself. Yeah. So then, at the time of conception, we have kind of a thing that proves that from the point of view of habituations, right? How does a child know how to breathe when it comes out of the womb, right? Nobody tells the child, you do like this, you know? So the child knows automatically, you know, then say, yeah, this, you know, this in the genes and this, that. But where does that come from, you know? So that's actually a few things from the point of view of epistemology or reasoning that proves these aspects, yeah? And then also habituations, even, you know, we have twins, identical kind of, you know, born from one egg. It's like physically, exactly, especially until the age of mid-20, right? Exactly physical, they are the same. Yeah, the same kind of, you know, they look the same. But the behavior can be completely different, or their interests can be completely different, right? So then the physical aspect, of course, comes from the parents, but partly. Of course, partly is karma related, but also partly from the parents. But then mentally, yeah, their inclinations or kind of habituation patterns comes from something else, yeah, because sometimes you can see the children have a complete different kind of interest than the parents, right? So, yeah, so there's many reasons we take into account to see that if reincarnation exists or not, you know, there are more reasons to prove for its existence then there are valid reasons to prove it doesn't exist. So that's, you have to examine yourself, right? The Buddha said, don't accept my teachings out of faith or reference from me. You should check if it's true or not. So everything in the Buddhist teaching, we should check if it's true or not. You know, so that's also true for this aspect of rebirth, which is, yeah, for some people a bit difficult to, just to think about it. Some people, difficult, you know? So, but it's very essential, especially if you're gonna talk about the 12 links of independence, or of dependent origination, sorry, 12 links of dependent origination. So without understanding reincarnation, doesn't make sense, you know? So that's why we have to have a certain aspect, understanding why do the Buddhists believe in reincarnation. It's not blind faith, or the Buddha said so, or it was part of Indian culture at that time. It's kind of, you check, right? What is the cause of consciousness? Yeah, so consciousness is not matter, it's not physical, though there is a correlation between what we call consciousness and brain activity, right? So the correlation between mind and matter is being examined, right? And even from a causal or resultant aspect, it's been quite well researched, yeah, in certain fields of neurophenomenology, for example, how actually consciousness influences our brain, right? And the other way around. Yeah? So, but what consciousness is, from the scientific point of view, it's not that easy to pinpoint. You cannot put it in an equation or something, right? Because it's not matter. You know, so then it's a kind of subjective thing. But how it relates with something we can measure in the empirical kind of aspects of science, like the brain, that relationship we can examine, right? That how consciousness has a correlation with the brain or brain activity. So then the question of the stream of consciousness, as Stevenson said in his research, there's something that carries the information from a previous personality to the present, right? So it means a child remember things out of the previous lifetime that can be validated, yeah, that can be checked in names of people, a situation, how houses and things look like. So there's many case studies like that, you know, like 2,000 cases will be examined over 40 years. Yeah, it's not just kind of one or two random cases here and there, right? So it's quite a research, you know, over a few decades. So that's quite substantial, you know. So then Jim Tucker, one of his students, because Stevenson passed away a few years ago, but Jim Tucker, one of his students, he did he summarized his research in a few popular books, which is very interesting, you know. Kind of books like Life Beyond Life is one, you know. That's, I think, the most famous one. I don't remember the title. But it's very interesting to read those cases. I mean, there's a few case studies mentioned. If you want to invest a bit more, you can buy the case studies from the University of Virginia. And that's very inspiring, you know, to see how he examined these kind of cases and what are the aspects of the previous personality and the present. Very interesting. How actually habituations carry on from one life to the next, as we explain. Yeah, what he calls carries the information, and that's what we call the continuity of consciousness. Because if there's a gap or break in consciousness, then the possibility to remember is not present, right, from a particular point of view. And consciousness also needs to be produced by something. So if there's a gap or a break, then what is the cause of the consciousness in the new life? That's the question. Right, so that's, we say that is a continuous kind of aspect. So when we die, the body, the physical body, you know, we leave behind, like moving from one guest house to the next. Right, it's like not a big deal. Dying is not a big deal from a Buddhist point of view, because we did it so many times. You know, so that means that you know, you don't have to be afraid of it, because it will happen. You know, same as falling asleep, same thing. You know. We did it so many times, but that we can remember, you know. We slept yesterday and that we can remember, so we just lay down and not afraid of it, you know, because we know we're going to, I mean, we think we're going to wake up, but that's also a question, because that's not certain, right? You can die halfway through, you know. So that's why I have a good motivation before falling asleep. Then if you die in the sleep, then at least you go in the right direction, yeah. So, but the continuity of consciousness is very important to examine. You know, when we were studying the second chapter of the Pramana Vartika, right, text on epistemology and logic, then we were debating these aspects of consciousness can only be produced by consciousness itself, habituation patterns of consciousness, you know, possibility for a child or a newborn to breathe and do different things, and how that relates with previous inclinations. Yeah, so that's. But then I was still not kind of. As His Holiness Dalai Lama says, with these issues of reincarnation, logic is important, but maybe you need something more to you know, get this conviction more stronger. So that's why, you know, this aspect of Stevenson's research is very interesting. You know, if you put statistics, I studied a bit of statistics in my studies of hydrology. If you put statistics to his research of 2,000 cases over 40 years, you know, you get possibilities which you cannot call random anymore, you know, a child. Remember exactly different cases or events in the previous lifetime, but can be checked. So that's still kind of, you know, other scientists, they can say, yeah, coincidence, or by the power of clairvoyance or something like that, he knows that or she knows that. But then together with the birthmark of the cause of death, of the previous personality, like a shot wound or something like that, or an accident, so that there's a birthmark in the present personality in relation with the cause of death of the previous one, that together with remembering the previous life, that is kind of one in a billion or something like that. And it's not, it repeats itself, right? So it's not one case. So if you put statistics to it, it's kind of, you cannot just wipe it off the table saying it's nonsense. You know, so it's very interesting research. Yeah. Like at the moment, it's very difficult to get funding. Yeah, so then Jim Tucker wants to do more with it, but it's very difficult to get money for research like this. Mm-hmm. So luckily, the person who invented the Xerox machine, he was rich and he wanted to die poor, so he gave all his money to Stevenson. You know, so that's how Stevenson actually funded his 40 years of study. You know, in different countries all over the globe. In this kind of, it's very interesting. So that's one aspect, yeah. Another aspect that we talked about sometimes is also the existence of non-local consciousness. Yeah, so at a time of also very well examined, even more scientifically examined, is the aspect of near-death experience or out-of-the-body experience, right? So people at a kind of cardiac arrest, yeah, within 10 to 20 seconds, the oxygen flow to the brain stops and the person is brain dead, right? So according to the scientific point of view, there shouldn't be any conception or any kind of perception at that time, right? If mind and brain is the same, then when there's no activity in the brain, there's no possibility of perception, right? So there are cases being also quite well examined. It's about 10 to 20% of people with cardiac arrest talk about these experiences, right? So it's not that many, but it's enough to be researched, right? So then there's a lot of research is done all over the globe, yeah? Bruce Grayson did a lot of work in the US, then Pim van Lommen in the Netherlands. If you see their presentations or you read their publications, it's quite scientific, you know, that the people, certain types of research, they come to, you know, what people perceive when there's, so to say, no activity in the brain according to EEG, right? It goes flat, yeah? But the person perceives things, and what is being perceived can be validated. Yeah, if the person comes back to life. If the person doesn't come back to life, then we can have validated by ordinary means, right? So, but if the person comes back to life, we can, you know, talk with the person, what did you perceive? And sometimes the person, they talk about it from their own side. You know, so very interesting kind of cases, you know, so that's certain research say 90, in the category of 90% what they say is valid. Well, you know, materialistic reductionist neuroscientists will say oxygen flow to the brain stops, people see all kind of things, right? And then people are revived and come back to life, and in the between state they see all kind of things. That's what the average reductionist of neuroscience gives the answer. But then if you read the reports and the research, then you come to, it's not just mere imagination, right? So then sometimes about 90% is valid. That people describe a particular behavior of the surgeon, or they know exactly where the nurses put the glasses in which drawer, which body lost later on. There's many cases like that, you know. So that can be validated, that information. So that's what we call non-local consciousness, or a consciousness that doesn't need a particular location as the brain, a physical location. Yeah, so that's very interesting research. And then, of course, we have the clear light of death meditations we see in Buddhist practitioners, right? There's cases of people, especially we have had quite a few cases in South India, where you have a climate of 25 to 30 degrees, right, which is hot. And if the body doesn't decay within a few days or a few weeks, when the person is clinically dead, the doctor comes and says, this person is clinically to be considered as dead. There's no heartbeat, no lung function. Finished, right? But the body doesn't decay over a week, 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. And not only doesn't decay, but there's a pleasant smell, a very pleasant fragrance, you know, and a very blissful feeling, you know? So that's something going on. So the doctors come and see it and say, we cannot explain this. It's very interesting. So there's only two cases done with the EEG measurement. That's still very difficult because the delegates, the person, the master is meditating on the clear light mind of death, and the students or the attendants, they don't like scientists to get involved. Unless His Holiness writes a letter personally, let a scientist do the research. You know? So until that happens, nothing can be done. You know? So, and there's, of course, out of respect for the meditator. So, yeah, so I've seen a few cases of my own teachers, and that, and with a little bit of scientific background myself, that something there is kind of very special. You know, it's kind of, there's consciousness, there's physical, there's no heartbeat, but also it's not a corpse. The body is not like a corpse, you know. And also you can see the expression. When the consciousness leaves the body after a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, right, then the whole thing changes, but only after that. You know, so that means there's kind of consciousness present. Well, clinically, the person is be considered dead. Yeah? So that we explain from the point of view of the Vajrayana practice, there's still subtle consciousness within what we call the inner structural drop in the heart chakra, which actually meditates on, you know, the clear light mind of death, so to say. Yeah, there's different practices that can be done during waking state, and then you take it into the state of the sleep. If you can do that in the sleep, you can do that at the time of death. You know, so that's, yeah, this is another thing to see, that there's consciousness, but actually it doesn't really need a brain. Yeah, so the subtler the consciousness becomes, the less dependence on brain activity. Yeah, so that's also, so anyway, there's a lot of other scientific research done, but with the gaps in brain activity of 500 milliseconds that repeats itself over a particular frequency. One of my friends in the University of Pisa is undergoing doing this research, one of the neuroscientists there, very interesting, because it goes back to what we call the gaps in the clarity of the mind, right? So at that time, there's no coarser forms of consciousness, so that's probably what he's measuring, you know, so very interesting, yeah. So that's the preliminary to the 12 links, is to understand that the continuity of consciousness is there since the beginning of lifetime. Yeah, without that, if you believe in reincarnation or not, that you have to examine yourself, right? You don't have to accept that because I studied this stuff for 20 years and I should know. But you examine yourself, right? It's either reincarnation exists or it doesn't exist. And what are the reasons? Yeah, and even if you believe reincarnation to exist, then still it's very important from a Buddhist point of view, if you want to progress on the Buddhist path, to get conviction. Because if you read a lot of prayers of highly realized beings in the past, you know, bodhisattvas, they always pray, may in all future lifetimes remember my previous lifetimes. You know, because if you remember, then the insight in these things becomes stronger, right? And the conviction, you know, that's very important. Yeah, so that's the introduction to the 12 links. Did you have a look in the tea break? Yeah, with this together and then, yeah. So yeah, that's a few things to say first. If you look at the first picture on the front, yeah. So for a few people, I already explained last time. So there's a huge kind of monster, you know, holding the wheel of life. Yeah. So that's actually the Lord of Death. You know, that because we're going to die, and then not only we die, but we get reborn. You know. So the continuity of consciousness, there's no beginning. And there's no end, right? So, generally speaking, consciousness doesn't have a beginning and doesn't have an end. But the impure aspects of consciousness, right, has an end. Yeah, destructive emotions can be stopped. Or negative karma can be purified, right, as we talked about. Right? So the pure consciousness, what we call is the most subtle aspect of consciousness, or the ultimate nature of the mind, yeah, from a conventional point of view, that goes there onto Buddhahood, right? So that most subtle aspect of consciousness is without any stains, is without any, afflictions, yeah, because the clouds are not a part of the blue sky, right? They obscure the blue sky. So in the same way, our destructive emotions, they obscure to see this ultimate nature of the mind, right? Yeah. So, So that means that the most subtle state of mind carries on from lifetime to lifetime, all the way up to Buddhahood, right? Yeah. So that's the Lord of Death holding this cycle, and then we die and we born, die we born. So the stream of consciousness never stops, but even in life you can see the same thing, you know. The sense consciousness, they stop. Go to sleep is very similar to dying. You know, when you go to sleep, then slowly, if you're really aware, then you see, the sound becomes less, and then stops. You don't hear anymore. So sense perception goes dormant, right, in the time of sleep. Sense perception goes dormant, right? So you don't, sometimes in a very deep sleep, even if you try to wake them up physically, they still don't wake up, you know, especially little children, you know, when they have to wake up early in the morning, but then they don't like to wake up. You know, because it's very deep sleep, you know? Yeah. So that means that sense perception at a time of deep sleep actually ceases to exist to a certain extent, right? Becomes dormant, as we say, you know? So then mental consciousness is still active because we dream mental consciousness never stops. Yeah. So this mental consciousness, and then the most subtle aspect of that, yeah, with at this clear light mind of that meditations, that is the consciousness that goes from this life to the next, right? So we die, then we go into an intermediate state, or called the bardo, right? The bardo or intermediate state. So it is similar to the sleep and the dream. You know, when you go to sleep, you fall asleep, it's similar to dying. Then when you dream about different things, it's very similar to the bardo, you know, the intermediate state, right? So then it's in the intermediate state, and then you be reborn, and then same thing, you dream and you wake up, yeah? So, but when we wake up, we remember, sometimes we remember the dream. But if you're born, you know, you into this womb of the mother, and this very complex system, and very intense. So because of the process, you don't remember the bardo, right? So that's why also we don't remember the bardo in this life, and we don't remember, most of us don't remember the previous lifetime. Yeah, children will remember it, it's only until the age of 6, 7, most cases, and then they start to forget, because the interest and the habituation in this life starts to take over, right? Yeah. But the habituation of the previous life are much stronger in those first 5, 6 years. So that's why children, when they remember a previous lifetime, then they say, oh, to the present parents, you're not my parents, my parents live over there, right? There's many of those case studies is like that, because the parents of the previous personality, the habituation to them is much longer, many years, right? So that's why they say, oh, my parents live over there. It's very interesting to see how this kind of habituation patterns actually causes a person to say something, you know? Yeah. Yeah, so that's the Lord of Death holding this wheel, you know, because you die, then you go into the bardo in most realms, right? And then you'll be born, and then the same thing happens over again, yeah. So then in the circle, in the center, you see, there's three animals, a pigeon or a bird, a snake and a pig. You see that? And actually the bird and the snake, they come out of the mouth of the pig. You see that? I mean, this picture is not very clear, but outside you can see more clear, you know? So have a look, so there's the pig like that, and then the pigeon and the snake, they come out of it. So that means the pig represents ignorance, the snake represents anger, and the bird represents attachment. Yeah, so it means that anger and attachment are originated in ignorance of this grasping at a concrete I am mine. Right? So that's also been researched in by Daniel Brown in this research from the Harvard Medical School. You know, actually it comes from her, this term. Because in this research of asking people to have a conversation and then in 10 to 15 minutes, how much they say I, me, myself, how much they talk about themselves, right? In a kind of self-centeredness, you know? So you calculate, because of linguistics, you know how we talk, and that influences or reflects how we think and how we are actually emotionally, you know, how people talk, it reflects emotions, right? Same with facial expressions. But the research of Paul Ekman, you see in the face that a particular kind of emotion is present, right? So that proves that. So with language, same thing. So then Daniel Brown did this research of how people verbalize things and how that actually reflects the inner being. Yeah, and then how that reflects, especially in this research, the main interest was this aspect of self-centeredness. So people will say a lot of I, me, myself. They have a high score in those words, in the 10-15 minutes. Then if you look at the mental and physical health records, then you can see on the mental level there's more inclination to depression, low self-esteem, right, and the self-centeredness, and then on a physical level, higher blood pressure, inclination for heart diseases, etc. Very interesting research. So the Buddha 2,500 years ago talked about these things. Ignorance is the root of suffering, right? So, yeah. And it's also true, you know, where you say, please get angry, everybody. You know, if you ask you, get angry, come on, get angry. That's very difficult, right? But if I tell people, oh, you look like this, you behave like that, and you do like this, you know, then people get, how dare this person say this to me? You know, I'm not like this, I don't behave like this. And then we get irritated. So it's related with this concrete concept of I am mine. You see that? You know, so that's the pig, you know, the pig is the ignorance. Yeah, the snake is the anger. You know, if you have a snake, just the feeling. We in Serra Monastery, we have all kind of snakes, sometimes cobras in the garden. Luckily not in the inner garden, because our house is quite secured, luckily. But in the outer garden, sometimes they come 2-3 meter cobras. And then when it's when I sometimes I was studying, and then my window is here, and then open, always windows always open, because it's always 25-30 degrees, you know, so it's like, so then, and then sometimes in the dry season, when all the leaves are on the ground, right, then you hear the snake, and then you feel there's a very uncomfortable feeling with it, you know, and then the birds, they start to alarm because they have eggs, and then they think the snake, once one little bird like this, just attacking the snake, you know. So there's a kind of, yeah, so that's maybe why anger, they say a cause of to be born as a snake is maybe anger, but it's like, they come up and shh, it's very, you know, yeah, yeah. As long as you don't step on them or corner them, then it's fine, you know, but it's, yeah, you feel there's a kind of energy around the snakes, you know. Some people like snakes, I don't know, but yeah, generally speaking, that's the feeling. So that comes out of the mouth of the pig, right? Because out of, how dare this person say this to me? I'm not like this. We get aversion, right? So that's the reason why it comes out of the mouth of the pig. Yeah? Then the bird also, attachment. I need this. I need my iPhone and my iPad and iBook. You know, you can see there's many things. Even the commercial industry, they know that. You know, they can. You can do this. You can do that. You know, it's all has to do with me, myself, and I. You know, yeah. Run DMC. No, Run DMC. De La Soul. There it is. Rap song, me, myself, and I. Yeah. This summarizes the whole thing. So actually, it comes, all the destructive emotions, they're rooted in this ignorance. Yeah. So because we have this kind of concept of I am mine, yeah, to see the self as very concrete existence from its own side, you know, without dependence, that's how it appears, and that makes the world externally also like that. So internally we feel like that, so externally we also think every act exists from its own side. My problem, my this, my that, you know. So that is the cause for all the afflictions to come about, you know, this ignorance. That's, as we're going to see also in the 12 links. Yeah, so that's symbolized by those three animals. You see that? So then, because we talked about a particular intention causes a particular act, right? Either physical or verbal or mental. Yeah, so that's the next circle, the black and white half circles, right? It's half black, half white. Yeah. So that means that by the power or either positive states of mind or negative states of mind, right? So white is positive, black is negative. Yeah. So by the power of positive state of mind, the mind becomes virtuous, right? Or becomes kind of producing happiness in the future. Yeah. Negative states of mind causes suffering, like anger, attachment, jealousy, pride, you know, those kind of negative states of mind. Yeah. So the mind motivates physical and verbal behaviors. Yeah, like my friend in prison, in this emotional hijack of anger, he killed the person, right? Some other people, they do verbal abuse. Yeah. It's also very interesting research done, verbal abuse over Twitter, and how that influences people's, the person who actually engage in that activity, and then look at the health records. Yeah, so it's very interesting. People with more verbal abuse over Twitter or whatever device or whatever kind of social media there is, that has a, you can see that the people who are irritated, they do that, that the person themselves, the health record, also higher blood pressure, depression, and same kind of conclusions. Very interesting. You know, so yeah, it's not only the Buddhist teaching who said, you know, if you, you know, engage negative, the result will be negative, yeah? But then the Buddha made the karmic aspect is a little bit more complex than just some aspects of it, of health, relationships, or, you know, that's, it's kind of only one aspect, right? If you do a lot of verbal abuse, it will cause high blood pressure and those kind of issues, right? So that means that there's just one aspect of karma, one negative result of it, yeah? But it's more complex than just the physical aspect, right? But anyway, that's been researched. You know? So the white one is the positive and the black one is the negative. And if you look well, you see the white, in the white circle, there's beings going upwards. And in the black circle, you see beings going downwards. You see that? Yeah. So that means, you know, we're flying to our city of liberation or enlightenment, right? We talked about purifying negative deeds, accumulating positive things. So you go upwards. Right? So if you do a lot of negative things, you can go downwards. You know, so yeah. That's those two circles. Yeah, if you talk about that, then some people, they freak out. So I don't know, yeah. You think you can be born in like a dog or cat, like Dodgy the cat? You think you can be born like that or not? Yeah. I mean, if you study, just sit down with a cup of tea in the middle of India and you just look at the street dogs or the monkeys. It's very interesting. Or you have the TV, you have those channels you can check. So that means if you look at their state of mind and their afflictions, it's very similar. You know, the afflictions, right? Of course, the capacity to think is completely different because we humans, we have kind of human intelligence. We can think much more constructive if we use it properly, right? So, but in the animal realm, you can see many aspects of afflictions, you know, anger, attachment, very similar, jealousy, protection of the boundary, you know. If you study dogs, I learn a lot by just watching the dogs and the monkeys. I used to, in Dharamsala, I sometimes do retreat, but then I'm always getting distracted by the monkeys. There's a little window so I can look outside, and then I see them chasing each other and fighting. So, but sometimes you can see, it's very similar. The way they behave, you know, the mental attitudes. Like when there's food, you know, there's a strong attachment for me, only for me. And then the monkeys, they put in, they try to carry in and try to hide everything, you know. It's very interesting to see. And the other monkey comes and, no, I want this, and then fight, you know. It's very interesting, yeah. So you can see very similar kind of aspects, though the emotions are, in the animal realm, is kind of, those beings are always kind of in an emotional hijack. There's no control in most cases, right? Yeah. So that's very sad, you know, they're stuck. Yeah. So it's very difficult for an animal to think constructively. You know, so that means, because consciousness is not matter. Yeah. So we think, oh yeah, but it can go like in a dream also. There's no control over our dreams, generally speaking, right? Yeah, we cannot say, okay, I'm going to sleep tonight, then I go there with my dream body tonight. Unless you're a high-level practitioner, then you can do something like that. But for ordinary beings, we just knock ourselves on consciousness, and we wake up and we had a dream of in between that, you know, those hours we were sleeping, right? There's no control. So same in bardo state, there's no control. So that means where we are reborn depends on causes and conditions, right? So it depends on causes and conditions of previous inclinations or states of mind, and especially at the time of death, you know. So that's very crucial to have a positive state of mind. And sometimes animals didn't get born in the same state because the habituation is like that, you know. Very difficult to get out of it. So once we had a crow, very old crow, he was dying, so we took care of him because the ants start to attack. So we took him, put him in a box, and then when he was dying, then he looked up. Because there were other crows coming over, and looked up, and then died. So then it's like, you know, I was thinking, oh, another kind of habituation to born again in that state. But luckily, we took him a few times around very holy objects we have in Sera, and I, my house, is Stupa, with a lot of relics. So then we took him a few times around that, so maybe next live birth, but then after that, he maybe goes up. So that's because... to be born in high states of rebirth is very difficult. You know, that's why mostly it's depending on holy objects or possibilities of meeting a guru who makes a connection with a sentient being, you know, like Lama Zopa Rinpoche once. In Bodh Gaya, when there's Bodh Gaya, you have many mosquitoes, you know. So once he opened all the windows and took off his upper dress and just sit like that. And then all mosquitoes, like thousands. So that means he makes a connection with all these individual consciousnesses that one day in the future, because they don't think about 10, 20 years or something, no? They don't think about it. They think lifetimes, you know. So if you have now connection with them in the future, I will lead them, you know, to life. Same that there, no? That last one there in the corner, the Buddha. When he first taught the five disciples, right? Because nothing is random, right, in Buddhism. So those five disciples were continuity of consciousnesses the Buddha actually had a connection with in one of his previous lifetimes. And he gave his own body to the five cubs, you know, the tigers. You know, so it's very, very interesting. So then Buddhism started to make a lot of more sense if you think about those kind of stories, you know. Yeah, but some people think it's all kind of, what? Some people find it all a bit difficult to, one of my own friends also, he told me, I just cannot think about it. Very intelligent person, but when I was discussing the possibility of reincarnation or not, he said, I just cannot get my head around it. Either it exists or not exists, I don't know. He's like, because it's very, you know, because we're so stuck in our present life, and we're so not only stuck, but we're also attached to this permanence, you know, not thinking beyond this life. And then, of course, then thinking about beginningless lifetime is very complex. You know? If you think about the end of the universe, there's no end, right? But we always think, oh, maybe there's something, there it stops. The constructs of our thinking is like that. You know? There's always a boundary somewhere. You know, so the things we think, oh, the universe, oh, maybe the Milky Way, then something else, and then something else, and then it stops. But actually, that's not the case. There's no end. There's no also beginning of the universe. If we talk about Big Ben or the Big Bounce, whatever you describe it, Big Bounce is a better description because it's, you know, implosion and explosion, right? So that makes more sense. So there's also a cause for the Big Bounce to happen, right? Or the Big Ben, whatever. Right, so there's something before that. Yeah, so there's an implosion and explosion. So that's why now the universe is expanding, but be created by this Big Bang, but something causes this Big Bang before to happen in this particular part of the universe, right? So also there's no beginning to be found in the continuity of cause and effect relationships of universes, right? So similar thing, very difficult to think about. But if you use reasoning, it makes a lot of sense. It's in that way. Yeah? So that's a lot of proof that there's a possibility of, you know, having these different types of existence over a long period of time without beginning. Yeah. Yeah. So then, the white is going up and the black is going down. Yeah. Mostly, darkness is with we affiliate with negative, right? And white we affiliate with positive. Yeah. So that's why that aspect. Yeah. So then there's the three realms of the lower existence and the three realms of the higher existence. Yeah, so animal, spirits, and hell realms kind of thing. So that's also, you can see the three lower segments, you see that? The three lower segments, you know? So that are the three lower realms, or, you know, the animal realm we know, right? We see. So in most cases, there's more suffering in the lower realms than in the upper realms. Unless you're born as a dog in a very wealthy family who takes care of you, then I even heard about dogs who go to the psychiatrist or something like that. In the US, this kind of, yeah, I heard the story. Because it was disturbed. Very interesting story. So that means that certain animals as pets, they have a better life than human beings on another part of the planet, right? Yeah. Yeah. But generally speaking, and the animal realm has more suffering than humans. You know, especially if you look at animals in the wild, you know, they're eating each other, you know. Yeah, it's a lot of suffering there. Or just watching street dogs in India, you can see, you know. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the animal realm. And then spirits, do we believe in spirits? Spirits? Non-humans, non-animals, but entities called classified as spirits. Yeah. So if you think about, you know, Bardo exists and consciousness and non-local consciousness exists, then there's also maybe possibility of an entity without a physical body, right? Yeah, so if you don't see them, doesn't mean they don't exist, right? Because the back of yourself also you don't see, but it's very evident, it's there, you know? So if you don't see things, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Same thing, you know, if you have an iPhone or a smartphone, and you bring that, just imagine you bring that back 200 years ago in time, just 200 years, and you tell a person, look, I'm calling my father on the other side of the planet. He said, no, not possible. How can you do that? No possible. They don't believe that, no? Right? Because their mind is not trained in this kind of system to understand it, right? So same with past and future lifetimes, because we up till now, we never really thought about it. So it's very difficult to get our mind around it, you know? Yeah. And it's even more true about lower state of existence and rebirth. Yeah, so spirit, same thing, you know? It's very poor, very sad, because they're very confused, you know? Very, yeah. And then hell realms. So I don't know if you believe in hell realms. But actually it's not kind of a physical state, right? It's kind of a mental state. But it's, you can compare it to a person. I always compare it. It's not the same, but at least there's a comparison. If you're in one particular environment, well, the environment is exactly the same, but two individuals experience it completely different, right? So it's a mental state, right? It's not the external condition. Yeah, as you said, on a nice sunny day, you sit somewhere on a terrace in London with a cup of tea and you enjoy, and then your friend is depressed and doesn't enjoy it, and there's a lot of suffering. But the external conditions are the same. Or even a worst case scenario, you sit on the same seat or same table with a person who has a bad trip using particular drugs or something like that. That person is thinking the whole city, including himself, is on fire, and you're just sitting there and enjoying your tea, right? So there's kind of two mental states, you know, completely different experience. You know? So hellish states is kind of not a physical location as such, right? Though the experience there is a bit more intense than just a bad trip of any substance. Yeah. Anyway, that's the lower three types of existence. Then the top, you see there's sometimes two or three divisions, you see that? So then there's the God realms and the human realms, which is being considered as more favorable. Yeah, because as humans, we have a little bit more happiness than one of the three lower realms, right? And the God realms is even more bliss. You know, so if you're born in the God realms, like most of our suffering comes from these kind of destructive emotions, right? Very coarse states of mind, you know. So you can see minds of criminals who don't have the understanding of their own feeling. That mind is very coarse, you know. So that means if the mind becomes more and more subtle, you know, what you can accomplish with calm abiding or those kind of aspects of mind training, then it's much more bliss. And kind of, you know, peace of mind. Because the coarser forms of consciousness, of the afflictions, etc., and coarser states of negative minds and conceptualities, they cease to exist, right? Because the mind goes inward, so you cut off all the sense perceptions with a very coarse, you know, same thing I always tell you, you know, that if you sit one Sunday morning or afternoon, relaxed, you had a good night's sleep, good breakfast and relaxed, not too much eating, of course, a little bit reading, very peaceful, right? They say, oh, I have to do shopping because otherwise I don't have breakfast tomorrow. So you go out and do shopping, and one of the, just imagine you go to one of the busiest supermarkets, and you're just in there for 10, 15 minutes. You come back and you're like, tired, you know? Or if you go in the city and come back, it's like, you feel a bit tired, right? And it's not the physical exercise that makes you tired, but the sense perception of all the different things we see, we hear, we smell. If you go to a city like Bangalore, or now Delhi with a smog, you know, it's very tiring. If I go out here in London to go somewhere and come back, it's not as tiring as going out in Bangalore or Delhi. Because the intensity of the sounds and the smell and the busyness is so much more intense that you get really tired if you just go out somewhere in Delhi. Now it's in Delhi really, really bad. Always this time of year, November. I went to a few conferences from Tibet House in Delhi, always at this time, and Geshe-la Dramdala asked me, come, so we'll go there. And then sometimes it's blue, I mean, there's no clouds, but you can't see the sun because of the smog, you know. And then last time I went, I only was there for, I was very tired before I went, so I was a bit weak. So I also got a kind of lung infection just being in Delhi. One of my friends in Delhi stays there for 6 months a year. And then she went to do Ayurvedic treatment in South in Kerala, because he's into that. And then they thought she was a heavy smoker. But she said, I don't smoke, you know, I just live in Delhi. But anyway, so that's one aspect. But the busyness sometimes of external factors that stimulates the senses makes us tired, right? So you can imagine if you generate some concentration, you cut this kind of sense perception, right? And then the mind becomes more subtle, and when the mind becomes more subtle, you can feel the taste of the nature of the mind a little bit. It's more coarser form compared to higher levels of development of the ultimate nature of the mind, but you get a little bit idea or taste of this kind of luminous aspect of the mind, right? So that's a kind of, if you develop that more and more, you like to abide in that state more and more. So that actually causes you to be born in one of these gold realms. Yeah, because that's, if you don't have these coarse bodies which needs food and all this stuff, you know, that makes your mind dull and everything, then if you're born in those states, then there's, you don't have to depend on those things. Yeah? So you leave, you actually survive on the samadhi, you know, on the calm abiding. You know? So that's no need for food and everything. Yeah? So then it's a very blissful state. Yeah. So that's the god realms. That's the top. You know? You see that? Yeah. Then what we go into, so that's the, what we call samsara. You know? Samsara means to be born again and again by the power of karma and afflictions. Yeah? Karma and afflictions are the causes for suffering. Yeah? As long as you have karma and afflictions, you are reborn again and again and again. Yeah? So that's this kind of circle. That's probably why it's in a circle and not in a square, because it symbolizes going around, right? In samsara. Yeah, so that's the where you can be reborn. Yeah, so the three lower realms or the three upper realms by the power of the three poisonous mind, right? Of ignorance, attachment, and aversion. Yeah, so that's inner circle. By the power of those three afflictions, which is rooted in ignorance, you either create positive or negative karma. There's the next two circles which cause you to be born in these states. Yeah, you see that a little bit? So then, to give a more detailed explanation, then you see 12 sections, you know, around it, the oval-shaped sections on the outer circle. That are the 12 links of dependent origination. Yeah, so dependent origination, meaning by the power of this, this will happen. By the power of that, that will happen. That's the cause and effect relationship. Yeah. So the Buddha, when he taught these teachings, in the, you know, he initially explained it from the point of view of a seed and growing to a sprout, as we talked about, right? The, if you have a seed and the right conditions are present, it will grow into a sprout, and that grows into a tree, right? So that's how the Buddha also explained the 12 links of interdependence. By the power of ignorance, there's afflictions, right? By the power of afflictions, there's karma, right? Activity. Yeah, so that means there's ignorance, then there's a state of mind that causes an activity to happen, right? And that activity to happen stops at a particular time, right? Because we're sitting here now and, you know, after a few hours, we conclude our session, right? So it means that activity stops. But it stops in an actual manifest way, but on a dormant level, it goes into a potential. Because what we're talking about here, we can remember. When you can back, go back home, you think, "Ole, we discussed this, we discussed that." You know, you can remember, right? So the consciousness of listening and thinking, being here, that consciousness stops, right? Maybe walk out of the door. Yeah, but then way back home, you can remember those things. That means that an activity stops, but it leaves a potential in your mind. You see that? So that's why we can remember. You know, so that potential in your mind is being planted in what we called this stream of consciousness, right? This continuity of consciousness. Yeah. So that's so that potential is sitting there. So when you go back home and you just get distracted with other things in life, you don't remember what we did here, right? But if you sit down and think, "Oh, let's review what we talked about," then you can recall the things and think about it, right? So the conditions for remembering things should be present, right? So that the conditions are present, then you start thinking, and you can remember because these potentials are planted in the mind, right? So every action we have, every action that stops, right, leaves a potential in the mind, and the potential in the mind can ripen in the future if the right conditions come together. Yeah, so that's how actually this cycle is being described, how we go from one action leaves an imprint. That imprint can be activated later on, you know, and then, so just to summarize it first, so you have ignorance, this grasping at a concrete I am mine, right? Based on that, we act either positive or negative. Yeah, if we act in a negative way, if all the karmic factors are complete, we're going to talk about in the afternoon, then it can propel you in lower states of existence, a negative act. And the positive act, if all the factors are complete, can propel you in higher states of existence. So you can go up or you can go down. So then we like to fly up to the city of liberation, so we have to prepare for that, you know? Yeah, not just buying it. It's not like just buying a ticket or something. You have to do something yourself, right? It's not that easy that you just buy a ticket and then at the time of death, they check what ticket you have and then they say, yeah, that door. Yeah. Yeah, so there's a movie of, I think, Monty Python or something. It's British, right? In the early days when I was young, I used to watch those movies. And what is it? Life of Brian, I think?
Oh, genius.
So I still remember one scene. Man, so those things I remember, but when it comes to the Dharma I studied in Serra, I always forget, you know? But those movies I remember. And it was, and now it starts to make sense. If you have kind of a situation in life, it is difficult, but mentally you're free to deal with it in different ways, right? So if you have a situation that's very difficult, you know, and mentally also you make it difficult, there's double suffering, right? But is physically it's very difficult, but mentally you're strong, there's less suffering, right? So there was this in this movie, and there was like people walking in, and then they say, "Where are you going? And where have you got a show?" Okay, and say, "Crucifixion." Okay, left or to the right? Okay, thank you. And then the next one. So they went all that way, and they were singing this song, "Always look on the bright side of life," right?
Yeah.
So that means, if you have a kind of joking aside, but just now at that time I didn't know. I just thought, "Oh, nice movie, nice distraction," you know. But sometimes you can see, now I remember, if you have a positive state of mind, then even if things are difficult, you can still have, you know, if you have to die, then you can still be very positive, right? So less suffering. So the same happens with the Tibetans in Chinese-occupied Tibet, who were tortured in prison. Same thing, you know? They cannot do anything about the situation they're in. They cannot escape. They cannot tell the Chinese not to do the things they are doing. They have to deal with the situation. So they know how to think. They know how to constructively do something about it that doesn't cause us mental suffering. And that's why also has been researched that Tibetans, it looks like, most cases, of course there's a few cases there, in most cases there's no post-traumatic stress disorder after they come out of prison. Right. Well, physically, some because of the electric shocks and starvation is very physically the body is kind of has to be treated, right? But mentally, in most cases, no trauma, nothing. Very interesting. Yeah, so I often tell the story by my own classmates. I know a lot of people who've been tortured in prison, but mentally, there's no issues. Very interesting. So that means that always look on the bright side of life is not extreme, but it's true. You know, if you look in a positive way to problems in life, you know, it's so easy, much easier to deal with than just being worried about it and go on all the time. That causes an extra suffering, which is not needed, because mental suffering is basically not needed, right? Physical suffering, of course, because we have contaminated aggregates, so, you know, something happens, we cannot solve that problem. But mentally, we can do something, you know? So that's why, yeah. Always look on the bright side of life. So, yeah. But yeah, there's a constructive way of thinking, you know? Yeah. So in India, you learn a lot when things don't happen the way you expect. Now getting used to the Western way of life that, you know, everything is just automatic and organized. And so then habituating to that pattern, going back to India, is another kind of challenge again, you know? But in India, it's so easy because the train is late and you know the train is going to be late for, you know, whatever hours it is, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, so then this, the capacity to deal with problems becomes easier, you know?
Yeah.
So I told my record, yeah, my record is 82 hours in a train in India. So it's like 30 hours delay, that includes 30-hour delay.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's, yeah, in one track was like two trains, though, but, yeah.
So that means that sometimes we're just stuck and the train is late, but you know what's happening there. So it's like, okay, not a big deal. Eventually we come there, right?
Yeah, it gives you kind of a very open way of dealing with issues, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, there's many stories like that. And yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's how we mentally, because in the West, if the train is a few minutes late, people freak out, right?
people really freak out. Yeah,
not all of them. Yeah, last time I was in Leeds, the train was 40 minutes late, and then the coaches were all mixed up. So there was no. I had ticket for coach D, but there was no coach D. There was no C, and no D, and no E. Yeah, so but it was very confusing. But actually, I was very luckily in a coach with a very nice people. They say, yeah, come on, just, and we had quite some fun. So it was good. But then you can see, if not a point of view, if you a little bit irritated, and then it's a big thing, you know. If your coach is not there, and the train is late, then people freak out, you know. Sometimes, yeah. It was not.
Yeah, that's why that train was called
Northeast London, I think, NLER. Yeah, the trains are very confusing in the UK. It's all kind of different. So there was not the great one. If you go to the west, there's the Great Western Railway. So there was not great, so maybe that's why we're stuck. Yeah. Anyway, so but to cut short, how you mentally act, how you mentally deal with the issue makes a big difference, right? Yeah, so that means that from the power of ignorance, we create a kind of afflictions. Yeah, by the power of the affliction that motivates our behaviors, yeah, physical, verbal, or mental, yeah, or all three, right? And that causes a kind of karmic process. Yeah, this kind of an habituation pattern is being built up that leaves a potential, and the potential comes to ripening. That's what we're talking about, right? So if you deal with your mind and you train your mind, you know how to motivate your physical and verbal behaviors in a constructive way, then there's only a way upwards, right? You see that? So that's what we're talking about here. Yeah. So there's 12 links of interdependence, right, on the external circle, actually explains that by the power of ignorance, yeah, that's been represented by an old man, you know, walking. So by the power of ignorance, the next step comes of this karmic formation. Yeah, by the power of ignorance, we create karma, positive or negative. Yeah, so negative karma can cause you to experience suffering. Positive karma causes you to experience happiness. But even positive karma, if it's motivated with ignorance, which in most of our activities like that. Yeah, most times we always have this concrete concept of I am mine, right? So even with positive karma, though the result is positive, it's still within the cycle. Yeah, that's because ignorance is there. You see that? So then we do things well and we motivate our well, but still it's this grasping to concrete existence, right? Inherent existence. So the result will be happiness, but like of a, you know, kind of contaminated form of happiness. Like eating a pizza. There's a little bit of happiness, but then you eat too much and it turns into suffering. Right? So those kind of happiness we experience. So because most of our actions are motivated by ignorance and sometimes mixed with some afflictions, so that's why there's never real satisfaction in life. You know, we have all these expectations, but those expectations are never met. Think, if I do this, then I will be happy. If I have this, I will be happy. If I do that, I will be happy. But actually, it brings a little bit of happiness, but not what we actually expecting to receive, right? So that means that all those things, as long as they're motivated with ignorance and afflictions, there's no real satisfaction in life. Yeah, so I can get no satisfaction, right? I haven't found what I'm looking for. Yeah, it's okay, kind of terms you can use to see that, you know, there's no real, in Dutch there was a pop group, there was a kind of Is this alles? It means, is this everything? Very, very. Only many years after I became a Buddhist, I realized, listening to this lyric before, that actually it has great meaning. But before, you were just like, oh, nice. But you didn't think about the meaning, right? So then later on, I thought, oh, that's interesting. Because is this everything? The same thing is, you know, you expect so much, but actually you don't get it, what you're expecting. So there's no satisfaction in life, you know? So that's... That means that as long as this kind of afflictions plays a role, and especially ignorance, there's not a real satisfaction to be met, right? So that means, like meditators in the mountains, or meditators in the city, or meditators everywhere, people who put things into practice, right? If there's some little bit of peace of mind, you know, just with simple concentration meditation, then that brings so much satisfaction. People say, why does it bring satisfaction? Because there's happiness. And that happiness that comes from the mind is a much more constructive form of happiness than the contaminated aspects of happiness we have out there in the city, right? So that means that's why people go to a quiet place. Go for a holiday, quiet place. Why? Because the mind settles a little bit more, right? And there's more relax, and then there's more happiness. So the happiness comes from inside and not outside. You see that? Yeah, so that means it's a mental thing, right? So the more we understand this peace of mind, then there's the experience. Then. So that's why people in the mountains, the serious meditators, they don't need any possessions. They just live with very simple things, and they're extremely happy. Because they have a real, you know, constructive form of happiness that comes from the mind, right? Very simple. And they don't want to go out anymore. You know, sometimes if you're in retreat, and you just have very simple food, and then you have to go down to, you finish your retreat, and you have to go down to the valley, or you have to, you know, you have to leave the country or something like that. Then it's like you don't want to go anymore, because, you know, there's a kind of very satisfaction is there, you know? So that comes from the mind. That's the conclusion, yeah. So that means as long as you have these afflictions, which is motivated with ignorance, you can still have some happiness, right? But it's within the cycle of contamination, right? So that's good to be understood, yeah? So then you see that as long as we have afflictions and karma, right, the two causes for suffering, yeah? So there's suffering and there's a cause of suffering, yeah? So the cause of suffering is karma and affliction. So as long as we have karma and afflictions, within the cycle, there's not real ultimate satisfaction. There's some happiness there, it's temporarily, and it turns into suffering sometimes, right? So, yeah, that's why we need to deal with this karma and afflictions. So karma we have to purify, afflictions we have to oppose the antidotes to it too. Yeah. So that's a little bit, a very summary. Yeah. So in the afternoon, we will explain all the 12 individual links, right? So then you get a much bigger understanding, deeper understanding, so to say, of actually how that cycle functions by the power of these 12 links. Yeah. Yeah, up till here, any questions? Or is maybe the karma of condition of the stomach being empty asks us to stop?
Maybe a little bit more of explanation on the how the three types of beings relate to the three poisons.
Allez. I mean, three types. We have six realms, right?
But on the first page,
yeah,
there's this the last words. That's it's a little bit new to me, that the way to mm-hmm. to expose that mm-hmm. three types of beings.
Allez, the three types of beings, or I mean, the three realms we talk about, right? We have six types of beings, or six transmigrators, and three realms.
Right.
So the three realms, or the three kind of stages of different aspects of samsara, we have a desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm. Right. So the desire realm, the three lower states of birth, right, as well as the human birth, and one part of the asura god realms, they belong to the desire realm, right? So our minds, also all our afflictions of our mind, belong to the desire realm. Yeah? So if you accomplish karma abiding, then the mind of the desire realm ceases to exist when you in the state of karma abiding, right? So if you can stay according to your wish on a particular object, the mind becomes more subtle. So then actually you achieve a mind that more belongs to the form realm, initially. Yeah. So that means, you see there straight away, because the mind doesn't belong to the desire realm anymore, there's much more peace, there's much more happiness gained, you know. And that becomes subtle and subtle and subtler on the four levels of samadhi on the form realm, and then there's four levels of the formless realm, right? So that are the three realms of cyclic existence. And so the form and formless realm are the god realms. You know, so the three realms, or the three kind of, you know, aspects of samsara have individual beings, right? So then the lower, like the hell, the ghosts, the animal, and the humans, and a few of the god realms, they belong to the desire realm. And the remaining god realms, they belong to the form and formless realm. Is that what you're referring to or not?
That's the answer I was seeking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So we have six realms, right? Six transmigrators, as we say. Transmigrator because they move in rebirth in those different three realms, right? So the three realms, the Dajai realm are the lower, including human and asuras, and then the higher up. And that's very interesting if you study that well, because if you study a text called Samsuk, meaning how to accomplish calm abiding and how to make this calm abiding, the mind more and more subtle, you can see you create cause to be born in those god realms, right? Because you get a little bit attached to this nice blissful feeling of this kind of subtle states of mind. So that actually causes you to propel yourself in your future lifetime in those god realms. Yeah. Yeah? Yeah? Yeah.
At the beginning you mentioned the three scopes. Yeah. Could you just remind us about those again?
According with the 12 links.
The three scopes of the Lam Rim.
Yeah, so the three scopes of the Lam Rim, yeah. So for a Buddhist practitioner, right, we take reincarnation as basis of our teachings, right? So that means we have three motivations in the spiritual path. Yeah, so that means the first one, get a precious human rebirth. Getting a human rebirth that has the right conditions, like we have right now, more or less, to move on our spiritual path. Yeah, we need conditions. We need to have interest. We need to have kind of inclinations and possibility to study, to reflect, to meditate. We need certain kind of causes and conditions to be here, right? So that's very rare to have those conditions, you know, because most people in London and in the UK, if they know what we are doing, they think we lost it, we cuckoo or something, you know, because the majority of people, they just only think about this life and you know, try to get some happiness, but unfortunately they don't know really the cause for happiness and the cause for suffering, right? So yeah, some people think we're not really considered as healthy human beings, but actually, you know, it's a kind of a different thing. Yeah, but that's understandable. Yeah, so to get another rebirth in the future that has the right interests, that has the right conditions of the Buddhist teachings in an undegenerated stage, you know, available, and the capacity to understand it, capacity to practice it. That's kind of 18 conditions that classifies a precious human rebirth, right? And then number 19 is added in modern times, that time. Most people just don't have time. They're too busy with other things, you know. So there's no time for spirituality because it's too busy with other things, you know. So that's number 19 in the 18. Yeah, 19. So so that means a precious human rebirth. Yeah, you can study in more depth what actually are those 18 points. And you can check if you have those 18 points or not, and how they can create causes in the future to have them again. Because it's very conducive to move on the spiritual path. Because having a precious human rebirth, it says, which is very difficult to find, because most people in the world are human beings but don't have all these 18 points. And that's why they're stuck in their life, right? So, yeah. So it is very rare from the point of view of number. And then it has great meaning, because by depending on this precious human rebirth, we can achieve another precious human rebirth in the future. We can achieve liberation and enlightenment by depending on the human birth with all these kind of 18 qualifications, right? So there's a precious human rebirth. So if you study the 12 links in relation to death, then it helps you not to fall in the lowest state of existence and how to create causes for a precious human rebirth. Because the cause for precious human rebirth is practicing of morality, which is kind of abandoning or not engaging in the 10 non-virtues or not engaging in negative deeds, right? That causes you to be born, together with stillness prayer, yeah, to be born as a human being. Yeah, so to practice morality, we have to abandon negative deeds, right? So then studying the 12 links, we know, okay, if you do this, this will happen. So I have to prevent that if I don't like to be born in lower states of existence, right? So then from the point of view of precious human rebirth, we can study the 12 links, yeah, and prevent ourselves from falling in the next rebirth into lower state of existence, but make sure we go up the ladder. We go up, right? So that's, you can explain 12 links. Then, from the point of view, the second scope of the Lam Rim is seeing that the precious human rebirth is good, but it's not perfect. Because still, you know, we have suffering of sickness, birth first, sickness, aging, death, yeah, meeting things we don't like to meet in life, and never meeting things we like to meet in life, and never being satisfied. In short, as long as you have the contaminated aggregates, there's suffering, right? So that means, by understanding this cycle, even though you're born in higher states in those three higher levels, as long as you still have karma and afflictions, there's still a possibility to fall back. Even beings in the god realms, for example, you know, they have a very long life, so much bliss and happiness, just blissing out for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, but there's an end to that, right? So that means it's not the solution. Yeah. So as long as you have karma and afflictions, you can fall back, you know. So that means, by understanding the 12 links, you and seeing ignorance is a cause for this propelling these karmas, you think, oh, I have to get rid of this ignorance, right? So you're not only, as a lower scope, you're only not engaged in non-virtue, right? You practice morality, but on top of practicing morality, you apply the antidote towards ignorance. Yeah. So you have a kind of motivation, that wishes to be free of all suffering and the causes of suffering, which is renunciation, right? The wish for liberation. Yeah. So if you have this wish for liberation, you see, if I take away ignorance, then the next number two will not come into being. Karmic formation. If there's no karmic formation, there's no imprint on consciousness. If there's no imprint on consciousness, there's no result in the future. So that's why the middling scope, the scope of the Lamrim that focuses upon liberation, thinks, okay, I want to become liberated from everything that has to do with contaminated birth, sickness, aging, and death. For that purpose, you know, I motivate myself and understand emptiness and eliminate ignorance. If I eliminate ignorance, there's no complete cycle anymore. The 12 links don't function anymore because the first has been taken away. So we will see in the afternoon how they need a sequence, right, to propel you in samsara. So that's the middling scope, right, to want to get liberated from this cycle. Yeah. So then, seeing that oneself, all sentient beings, whose one have been your mother, they are in this cycle of suffering because they have ignorance. So you think like, I'm just one, and they have so many, and they also want happiness and don't want suffering, same wish as I have. It's much more beneficial to work for them because they're more in number, right? So I'm just one wish, and they have so many. So how wonderful it would be if I can liberate all sentient beings from their suffering, you know? So that's a more broader kind of view than only oneself. Yeah? So then you motivate yourself to become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings, and for that purpose, you have to cut ignorance as well. Otherwise, you will never achieve the state of omniscience, right, of a Buddha. Because the Buddha is also liberated from samsara. Yeah, so for that purpose also, you have to cut ignorance. Yeah, and you understand the 12 links of dependent origination, not only in your own continuum, but also in the continuum of each and every individual sentient being. Right. And by understanding that well, you generate a wish for them to be free of that ignorance. If they wish free of ignorance, then the remaining links will not come into being. Right, you see that? So then you can explain according to the great scope of the Lamrim. Yeah, so there's three levels of our spiritual development from a Buddhist perspective. Presumed rebirth, liberation, and enlightenment. Yeah, so you can see Buddhism is not that easy. it's kind of, because we mostly think about a few years, you know. But what I said to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, with all the mosquitoes, they think about lifetimes. They don't think about one or two. It's like them. If you can think in that way, then also a few little problems we have in life is peanuts compared to the big picture. So that's a very, very constructive way of I always use the example now of one of my own teachers, Kanutir Rinpoche, when you're 20 years in the study program, then of course you get some doubts. It's not like a few years, right? So when I had doubts, sometimes I went to see one of my teachers, and Kanutir Rinpoche used to say, he said, you know, beginner's lifetime, enlightenment, takes a long time. You study well, you do the best things, put into practice, you do that for a few lifetimes, and the realizations will come. That's the kind of view they're thinking in those kind of terms, right? So yeah, it's completely the Buddha, same thing, you know. Once he gave his body to these cubs, you know, very hungry, then he doesn't think about just one body, one life. He thinks about, if I now this connection, future, I lead him, you know. It's amazing. That's, they think about lifetimes, you know. That's like His Holiness Dalai Lama, same thing. His Holiness doesn't talk about that in public. But, you know, to be born at the time of the Buddha and then make this vow or kind of, you know, commitment to preserve the Buddha Dharma in the land of snow, generation after generation after generation. Yeah, so they think in lifetimes. You know, they think if I be born, take this aspect now, then the future, that aspect. They think in hundreds of lifetimes, not just one lifetime. You know? So that's for some people very difficult to comprehend that mind, you know. But this is a totally different kind of concept. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, so that's... There's the three scopes of the Lambarim in relation with the 12 links. Yeah. Yeah? Yeah, so maybe people need some energy in the sense of... So, have some lunch and then we meet again at maybe... Yeah, people need some break, maybe 2:15, too? Yeah, is that okay? Yeah? Yeah? Give me some time.